Hello there. My name's Mark, aka the Canerdian Jedi, and this is episode 83 of the Holocron Chronicles podcast. I'm joined, as always, by the dancing man himself, Charlie Garden. Charlie, how you doing tonight?
Woo! I'm sporting, for the first time on the show, my repurposed from my old job. I'm sporting the Dragon Snakes here. That is the exclusive X-Wing Squadron, of which we are all members. And, of course, good old Rebel Alliance, which is really where my heart lives because I've always been a rebel. So, no, I'm good. It's a good night. We're going to talk about Bad Batch. I made a little bit of a faux pas because we're talking three episodes, and I didn't watch episode six again. I'm going to run a little light there. But you know what? We're going to have plenty to talk about, so that's all right.
It happens. It absolutely happens, especially when there's a double drop and we usually only cover two episodes. Easy little fub to make. It's not a problem. I'm sure we'll make it through. And to help us make it through, we are joined by a familiar face, although you can't see his face right
familiar,
now.
Familiar buckethead.
Peter, how you doing?
Yeah, I'll put this right here.
Doing pretty well.
Phase one.
Good.
You can sit right
welcome
here.
Welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. I enjoy it.
I love the commitment to the bucket head. That is fantastic. We'll see if you can last the whole episode.
Yeah, we'll see. The vent actually doesn't work, so the only oxygen is through the bottom. So that's right. The fun part.
Oh, mercy.
This is too heavy. Good, all right. That's
best of luck.
Work.
Charlie's trying to get in it. I'm not even going to grab the Mando behind me. Although I could grab, can I grab like a Mando chess piece? Is that?
There you go. Yeah, that's right. Mark is blowing it up with his, and I'm sure he doesn't want to brag. It's not the Canadian way. But he's really blowing it up with his effort to do some 3D printing. I said, line me up. My interest is doing it after you do your thing, doing like an OC Mando that's a rebel. So just coating that shit in some, all the rebel chevrons and stuff.
What I would do.
I don't know. No clue.
Hard to guess. The 3D printing thing is definitely a learning curve. It's a process. It is a, I've been telling people, like it's a craft. It's a hobby. It's not a tool. Like a 3D printer they're good. They're better apparently than they were a few years ago, but they're still not to the point of like, here's a thing. And just press print and then you have the thing. Like there's still a whole lot of like tinkering and learning and that kind of stuff. I'm learning, and I've been learning the hard way as my bag of scrap and failed projects over there can attest to.
Oh man.
Yeah.
But that's the only way. Breaking those eggs to make an omelet, right? I mean, that's real it. Artistry. That's how it. I mean, if you go back and listen to like the first couple of episodes of Secret Friends Unite for back in 2014, holy shit, those were bad. We were like, Axa wrote me this intro that I read that was like 2 minutes long. It was shit. It was bad. And I don't even think it exists anymore. I think it's in a hard drive somewhere that Todd has and he won't let it see the light of day. And you know what? We're coming up on episode 500 of SFU and that's all right. Let it set. Let it set. That's okay.
The fun thing with 3D printing is once you get like you can print it and you're like, yeah, I have a thing. And then the work begins. Is then you got to sand the sucker down and paint it and prime it fun shenanigans.
Yeah, I have a guy here in Grand Rapids, Donovan Larabelle, who I'll give a shout out to for the SFI chapter. He built our captain's chair. He's built just a ton of Star Wars props for me. He's working on an Admiral's badge for me right now for a costume that I'm going to wear at a show we're doing in a few weeks here, so I can do a Star Trek Discovery Disco Blues as Commodore, which is my rank in SFI. And that's the thing, man. Print it and got to sand it and paint it and stuff. And I'm all thumbs. April wanted to buy this model kit when we were at Mission Chicago a couple of years ago. That is just, I'm looking right at it because I don't think we're ever going to build it. So bad. I haven't built a model kit since I was a teenager. And I don't know. There's just so much that you got to get right. So much detail and stuff. And I love it. It's
just
good
lower
stuff.
Your standards. It's totally fine.
The clone has spoken. The clone has spoken.
Essentially, it's fun. I hope, like Charlie said, I'm going to be posting a lot of my progress and that kind of stuff. So if you're interested, follow along on my Instagram page, Canerdian_Jedi, and we'll share all our socials later. Right now, I want to share some amazing people that helped this show happen. Charlie, do you want to give these people a shout out?
This is something I do all the time. Well, yeah, if you pop on over to a little site called patreon.com/secretfriendsunite, you do have the wonderful opportunity to support the additional work that we do here on the Secret Friends U Network with additional content. It's been a while since we've heard from Mark, but Mark's had some great additional content. Looking forward to hearing some in the future. Peter and I, for example, I'm glad that he's here. We have been doing several segments of my show, which is The Facts of Geek Life. We take a classic series, we take a classic season, and we break down to several episodes. He and I have been going through the entirety of Ron Moore's 2009 Battlestar Galactica, which, Mark, I don't think you've watched it, but buddy, I gotta tell you, it's a Canadian classic. It was all filmed over in BC, and it's absolutely magnificent. But we love doing that stuff, and then we're also able to present our regular Secret Friends Unite content ad free over there as well. So it's super easy to get involved. There are obviously different tiers, which gives you access to our content and different other benefits, but also our top tier folks do get a shout out on every podcast we do, but everybody can try this out for free by visiting that website, again, patreon.com/secretfriendsunite for a 7-day free trial. And you get to give a go. And if you like it, please feel free to stick around. But we do love to give homage to the folks that give us that great support on the Friends with Benefits level. John Sidorf, the awesome Phoenix Sisters cosplay. That's my friend Kelly and my friend Crayley. We love you guys. Brendan Myers, Matthew Keel, and Corey in HD. Our top tier is the BFFs level. The Nias family of the Twin Cities out there in Minneapolis. Sean, Stella, and Henry, and your friend and my friend, frequent contributor to the network, Missy Merchant, right here in Northern Michigan. We're very grateful for you. So thank you very much. Also, definitely hit us up on YouTube. As the saying goes, smash that subscribe button, like everything that you get, because that lets us know that you're out there. We're very grateful. So we are always looking to grow the network so that we can bring you more great content. So we appreciate the folks that are listening and watching no matter where you are. So please keep doing that. We appreciate it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Thanks, Charlie. Peter, you've been here several times before. I don't think we have to go through all of the Star Wars getting to know you questions. Hopefully people know you already. They're familiar with you. But something big dropped last week. Charlie and I already did an Instagram Live. And the fun thing with Instagram Live is you can get things wrong. So I have to, I mentioned during that live that I thought the Wookiee was Buryaga. It is I think, new Wookiee named Kelnaka. But aside from that, I think we did a pretty decent breakdown of our thoughts of the trailer and our hype levels and all that kind of stuff. But Peter, I want to hear your hype levels and what you thought of that first Acolyte trailer.
Well, I had to rewatch it because the last time I saw it was last week. So I had to reacquaint myself with what was in it. I was excited that it appears to be High Republic.
It is.
So that's pretty cool. So the Jedi at the height of their power, all that. Outside of that, and I mean, Wookiee Jedi, awesome. Always wanted to see that. Outside of that, I'm not really sure what to think. In part because my impression from reading things about it was that Acolyte was supposed to be about like the rise of the Sith, or at least having to do with the Sith. Mm-hmm. And there's very little Sith in this trailer, so I don't know what to think of it. There's a red lightsaber and there's someone standing there going, "Oh, I'm evil." That was kind of it. There wasn't a master and an apprentice, which you think of when you hear Acolyte.
Yeah.
And so I'm just sitting here like, gosh, I really hope this is good. I just don't know what to think. Cause it didn't like Jedi. Cool. I've seen lots of Jedi.
Sure.
I like Jedi. But I was expecting Sith, and I didn't see Sith.
Yeah.
Other than like a few references.
I mean, so, in fairness, if I could jump in, you know, this was kind of a $1.49, so it was less than 2 minutes. And for those of us who are seeing episode one in theaters, which I am, I know that for certain people brings much consternation, like, oh my God, I wouldn't go see that movie again. But again, I've squared away our tickets. We're seeing it on May 5th, which is the Sunday of that weekend. It's released May 3 through 5. I just want to see Star Wars on the big screen again. I don't care. I'm going to enjoy the moments that I definitely enjoyed 25 years ago. But my point in even bringing it up is that there will be a longer look at The Acolyte contained within the showing of episode one. Now, that being said, if you don't go episode one, it'll obviously be on YouTube almost instantaneously. And if it isn't, I would be totally stunned. But
if it isn't legally, someone will.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, Peter, I feel you. I mean, if there was something that you were looking for that was very specific and it wasn't there, I could understand how you would say, well, I really don't know what to expect now because I was expecting a deeper dig. But I think that there's more to come. And again,
well, I know there's more to come. It's a teaser. Yeah, that's what these are.
Right.
But there's not a lot for me to latch on to other than, because I like lore, I like world building, so I don't, I like seeing all these things.
Right.
But
I just hope that
it actually deals with the Sith and deals with the Jedi facing the Sith and dealing with that and doesn't focus on other things that are not relevant to that story.
Right, to being an actual Acolyte kind of story. Yeah, exactly.
Right. There's a line in the end of, like, near the end of the trailer of, like, it's not about right or wrong, it's about power and who wields. It's like, okay. I don't like that. If that's where you're going, you're going to have some problems with Jedi versus Sith sort of deal if that's kind of the overarching theme of some of your character development.
I mean, a lot of the other interpretation that I've read is that, hey, you know, this has to have kind of a Rogue One kind of ending. You know, all these characters are going to have to die off because, again, in the council scene that you see in episode one, ironically, you hear Master Mundi say, well, the Sith have been extinct for millennia. So one of two things leads up to that. Either what he's saying is absolutely correct because everyone who saw a Sith is dead, or it's more Jedi bullshit, which, let's face it,
Mundi is generally full of that. So
we saw an absolute ton of that in the sequel trilogy and then certainly in Clone Wars and what follows. And that's what brought the Jedi down, is that they were so far up their own butts that they couldn't see what was coming. That was the real downfall of the Jedi Order. But anyway.
And I'm not saying, like, there's not going to be things that people aren't going to like or people are going to love, because I love the prequels. I'm unabashedly a prequels fan, obviously.
Well, I would imagine you would be coming to see episode one in the theater. Is that part of your plan?
If I can make my schedule work.
I hear you. It's just over that May the 4th weekend. So, yeah.
I'm already going to the John Williams concert on the 4th.
Ooh, very exciting. Yes. That's here in town. Peter and I do live in the same town. So the beauty of living in a mid-sized town is you do get a lot of stuff. Although, as I was sharing with Mark, because Mark and I were chatting over the last couple of days about the fact that there are 13 places in the United States only, not in Canada, sorry, Mark, that are doing a full 9-film Skywalker saga reshowing, and it's the most random ass group of, like, there's one in Kansas and there's one in Iowa and there's one in, there's like 3 in California, which totally makes sense, or there's one in, you know, Manhattan, that makes sense, but there's one in Chicago and there's one in Wisconsin. It's so random, you know, and it's not like it's all the same theater chain. They're not all AMCs, they're spread across. So anyway, the nearest one is in Chicago, but again, to go see all 9 movies, it's a 20 hour commitment for a ticket of like $85-$90, which I, you know, that makes sense. That's like $9.50 a movie. That's still cheaper than going to see a movie regardless. But yeah, the smattering of where it's happening, It must make sense to somebody. You know, somebody must have sat down and, you know, had your conspiracy board with all the red yarn, and that's how it told you that it made sense to have it in all these different places, and they were going to cover the most people that way.
Well, but it's not following the Lucas method, which is just shotgun it everywhere.
Exactly. You know, I'm not super bummed out that I can't go. I would love to just see the OT again on the big screen. That would be terrific. And if that's all I had to choose.
I've never seen 4 on the big screen. I've seen everything else. Just not 4.
When I was in high school, so we're talking pre-special edition, so we're talking about maybe 92 or 93, I know at least here locally, the Lokes Theaters, which is a Celebration Cinema, that's our chain here in Grand Rapids, did run the original trilogy, because that's all there was at that point. Then, of course, we did get the sequel trilogies, which Todd, who's our other SFU co-founder, when he and I were both at Michigan State, those in 1997, those all dropped. And so that was just an incredible thrill to go see those on the big screen. But again, it wasn't the originals, but again, you know, the originals are banned. They don't exist. They don't officially exist anymore. So anyway, now I'm on a tangent. So Mark, really, back to you.
I'm very curious, actually, Peter, on your, like, to your point, I'm really curious the direction that they go with the Sith being in the Acolyte. Like, they've pretty much, I thought, confirmed that this was a Sith story, or at least a story about how the Sith can infiltrate the Jedi and get into the Jedi temple and start training with the Jedi and that kind of stuff. So the Acolyte is a sleeper agent or whatever. How much that ties back to, like, Sith doctrine? Are we going to see the master, assuming that this is the apprentice? Where does everything end up? Charlie, to your point, if everyone thinks that the Sith have been eradicated, that means that none of these people are making it out alive, or that you have a full council full of Ki-Adi-Mundis going, what do you mean? There's no such thing as red lightsabers. Been seen in a millennia.
Don't look over here. Look at the man behind the curtain.
Why do you have a specific time period for this yet?
Like, is it 100 years before... 100 years before the
Phantom Menace, really. Phantom Menace. Essentially,
I think 100 years before 150?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I've heard various things. And of course, people are joking. They say, it's 200 years or 500 years. I guess I thought it was a five. But again, the actual time period of the High Republic was between 5 and 100 years prior to the Phantom Menace, I think.
I'm just looking it up right now. The Acolyte is set at the end of the High Republic era, approximately 100 years before the Phantom Menace.
There you go.
So that is directly from Wikipedia.
The Bible. The Wookiee Bible.
As the Bible.
That's
yes. So yeah, it seems it's the end of the High Republic. Like, this is, I'm guessing, leading to the downfall and the tightening up of the Jedi to what we see in the
Right, because very much described as the Jedi being kind of this kind of hippie commune, like, go be with the Force and blah, 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 to where we see them in the Phantom Menace. Everything is very rank and file. Jedis are A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, and we got people living in the temple, and otherwise you're on assignment, and it's very regimented. Then eventually they get folded into the grand Republic.
You had temples in various planets all over the
place. Right, exactly. Yes.
Wayfinders and people that just go off and become rock stars for a bit, but technically they're still Jedi. They're just finding themselves. But it's not as strict nearly in the High Republic.
Yeah, it sounds like being a Jedi was like kind of a bomb gig. But by the time of the Phantom Menace, it's like being in like AP classes in high school, which I never was because I'm not a smart guy. But it's basically like all homework. It's like, that's basically, there you go. That's your Jedi equivalent in the Republic era, is that it's basically all homework, where back, previous, it was Woodstock. It was Woodstock 100 years prior. Everybody was hanging out naked, rolling around in the mud, whatever, bro. Jimi Hendrix was playing. You're having all kinds of great times.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Exactly.
I can't wait to see more. I'm hoping we see more before that May 4th weekend, but it wouldn't surprise me if this is like radio silence straight through April.
You kind of hold on to it tight. Yeah, makes sense. You know, and again, the reason obviously that they're, yeah, people are bitching, oh, why isn't it coming out on May 4th? Why is it coming out on, you know, on June 5th? Obviously, they're trying to keep the focus on what we're going to talk about tonight, which is the Bad Batch, because they, you know, they want to keep that. Yeah, they want to keep that super tight. So, yeah, let's party.
Hey, Secret Friends Unite, let me tell you about Zencastr. We use them for our show, and now they're supporting us. Zencastr is now the all-in-one solution making podcasting easy. It's the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Being a creator has never been easier. And we chose Zencastr because of the ease of use, high quality output, and it makes it super easy for our guests to come on. We had multiple solutions we tried before, and Zencastr has just been the best fit for us. Why Zencastr? It's now super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. Log in using your browser and start recording a high quality podcast right away. Record studio quality sounds and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of Zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. Have you ever worried what you sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. So if you're interested in making an easy, high-quality podcast just with the click of a browser button, go to zencastr.com/SFU and use our code SFU, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Now back to the show.
Absolutely. So we've got a special, like Charlie alluded to before, a special 3-episode drop. We got Infiltration and Extraction, both dropped on March 13th as kind of a continuous story, but they did break it up into 2 episodes to just keep the runtime neat and tidy. I guess they could have done a double length episode, but they chose to do it this way for reasons. Charlie, do you want to give us a breakdown of this one?
It would be my pleasure. And again, my apologies, listeners. I did not rewatch episode 6, but I did rewatch episodes 7 and 8. So I did take some notes on that. But just my brain kind of glitched out. But at any rate, episode 6 was called Infiltration. This was written by Stuart Lee. A director was, directed by Stuart Lee. Writer was Brad Rao, and aired just a few weeks ago on March 13. Guarded by Rex and his fellow rogues, Ava Singh, the former senator of Raxus, secretly meets with Ryo Chuchi to discuss the formation of rebel movement against the Emperor until a clone assassin strikes. Now, again, great callbacks to the Clone Wars, which you could tell Peter was very excited by his woohoo. This attack fails and the assassin's captured and pressed for his information on Tantus, which we know is the secret clone experimentation facility that our heroes escaped from a few episodes ago. But another is sent to kill him off before he can talk. Amongst his equipment, Rex's men find a registered listing Omega as one of his assigned targets, prompting Rex to summon the Batch to his base on Teth. Omega and Crosshair relate what little they know about in the Imperial experiments and the clone assassination division formed by Hemlock on that world and at that base. Upon hearing that they have captured one, Crosshair warns them of a secret tracking implant inside the operative, but then the second assassin strikes, killing off the operative. The base is accidentally blown up. And an Imperial retrieval team led by Commander Wolf, arrives to capture Omega. I'm such a dummy because I started watching episode 7 and I'm like, this feels so disjointed. Why don't I remember what happened?
You get that quick previously on kind of recap and you're like, yeah, I guess that happened.
Correct. Did you want me to knock out, because it's a two-parter, do you want me to knock out?
Yeah, let's jump right into Extraction and do these.
All right, cool. Yeah. Extraction is episode 7. Saul Ruiz handling The direction, Jennifer Corbett and Matt Minishevitz, I think, are the writing team. The Bad Batch, Rex and few surviving troopers make their way through the ruined base, pursued by Wolf's men and the clone assassin, the latter in defiance of Wolf's orders. Ooh. The fugitives launch a shuttle, but then the assassin shoots the vessel down, forcing a crash landing and a rough trek to an extraction by Echo. The assassin pursues them on his own until he goes over a waterfall after facing Crosshair in a duel. Ooh, harrowing stuff. At the extraction point, Wolf intercepts them, but after being confronted directly by his old friend Rex and the truth behind the Empire's treatment of the clones, he lets them go. As they depart, Rex advises Hunter that in order to keep Omega safe, they have to find out why she is so important to the Empire. Whew. Wow. Whew. That was very, very heavy stuff.
Great two-parter. I love just the tense action in this one. Peter, what were your initial thoughts on this episode or these two episodes?
Well, I was quite excited to see Ryo Chuchi again. I quite enjoy that character. And anything that has to do with the formation of the rebellion and all of that, seeing how the clones are involved in that, I've been kind of watching that throughout the entirety of the Bad Batch because it's like, okay, how are these things going to work together? And so we're seeing a little of that. That was kind of cool. And obviously the Empire doesn't want that to happen, so they're going to try to kill people. Mm-hmm. So I really quite enjoyed that. And then they managed to, I liked that there was a callback to that they learned from previous mistakes and took out the zapper tooth from this clone so that he didn't off himself.
Right.
Hail Hydra-esque. Nice.
Yeah, very Hail Hydra-esque, exactly. Yeah.
Yes. I did like how they had like this whole tension going on of like Crosshair isn't saying what he fully knows, and so Rex and Hauser don't trust him, and then he's like, no, I've told you everything, and then he walks into the room where the assassin is, and you just see him like fully like sit up and go like, I know you. Mm-hmm. And so that was quite, one, it was animated really, really well, and two, it was just a really interesting moment of like, yeah, they're in the same program, like they know who each other are and all of that. So I thought that was really, really interesting how they tied that in.
Yeah. I love that. That, like I said, that was the tension. Like you feel that kind of, like you said, so well animated. I love when they can do that without giving the voice actors any work whatsoever. It's no offense to the voice actors, but when the animation can just do it, it's very effective.
Yeah. You say
voice episodes because it's one guy.
We're talking about Dee Bradley Baker, and I love it because I've been watching Mark, as I'm sure you have, on both on TikTok and Instagram, these basically promo bits for the season where it's just the actress who plays Omega, and then it's Dee Bradley Baker who is everyone else. I absolutely love it. What a talented guy, my God. And again, he also crosses over to Star Trek in so much that he is Murph on the animated Star Trek Prodigy series, which you can now see on Netflix with the second season being dropped in France. As Peter was able to uncover, was a weird story in France, but nowhere else. I'm sure it's been yanked by then, but we've all, been desperately waiting to see that second season. So anyway, super talented guy with a resume as long as both of your arms, just a guy who has been doing a lot of great work for a lot of years. So much, much respect to Dee Bradley Baker.
Yeah.
Do you guys, or actually first, I guess, Charlie.
Oh, yeah. And again, I give you one half of my firm analysis, but I feel like such a dummy for not rewatching episode six. But I love seeing, obviously, our masked assassin. We got two of them. We're all very rampant with speculation. Who is this? Is this, I've seen some fan theories. Oh, this is a second copy of Crosshair, but this is the one who made it. Some people are saying, is this tech? Is this a Winter Soldier situation? Mm-hmm. We don't know. We don't know, but obviously we're going to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, it definitely feels a little bit more Winter Soldier possibility just because of how just paying attention to the cinematography and how they dwell on the character and angles and just how they're using how we look at him is making me think that it's more of a Winter Soldier possibility. Totally could be a red herring, but just the way that they're doing it is that's where it's making me think.
And you that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, you do see that in that interaction in that scene, you know, at the top of the waterfall before obviously Crosshair is triumphant in the struggle between the two of them, where you see our mysterious masked assassin taunting him. Well, this is why, you know, you couldn't hack it. You couldn't make it as one of us. More being about a certain familiarity that wouldn't necessarily happen with just some run of the mill clone, even though all these clones, and that is something I noted. In the end of my notes for episode 7, I noted it's repeatedly sad and very heartening to see how much the clones resonate, how they are all a brotherhood. You know, you really hear Rex talk about, you know, I thought that the end of the war would result in us being free as opposed to us having to kill more of our brothers. And that's really what, and again, Rex, you know, everything in this, particularly that, you know, the last act of episode 7 really supports what we're originally going to see, which is the three amigos, which is Rex and Gregor and Wolf, that we see in Rebels, how they tend to come together, because Wolf couldn't turn his full muscle on his brother, you know, or on any of his brothers, because again, it's clones versus clones. It's absolutely a civil war, much like the one we had in, you know, the United States in the 1860s, you know, brother versus brother fighting over concepts. And it's, again, it's a lot of people that are now starting to populate social media with, is this setting up the next animated series? It could be, I called it Rex and the Rebellion. Could it be what happens beyond this and Rex taking those first steps to connect with Mon Mothma, even though we see him in exile, obviously in, I think, 3 or 4 BBY, in the, I think, the second season of Rebels, where he's in exile with his other two brothers. But does he spend maybe several years prior to that fomenting rebellion and uniting clones and maybe leading them to their ultimate end, but not in a good way? You know, so I'm fascinated to see, because, again, I feel a swell that might very well end in maybe our core characters are not going to make it. They're going to pull a Rogue One, or even like we talked about, maybe the way the Acolyte is going to end, and resulting in seeing how what they do leads to what Mon Mothma is doing, which leads to Andor, which leads to Rogue One, which leads to this, or at least episode 4.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I feel a lot of that. There's so much emotion involved in a cartoon or a kid's cartoon or however it is you want to describe it, that is so much more emotionally sophisticated than it delivers more than potentially you might expect. And that's why I've really come to love this show, particularly in seasons 2 and 3. I think they really got the job done.
You knocked out the both questions I was going to ask about this show before I even asked them, or this episode before I even asked them. That was, is the assassin someone relevant or just an assassin? And like Peter said, is it just kind of like a red herring? Like they're really focusing on this person, like they matter, like their identity is going to matter. So I'm very curious if it's going to be some big, you know, Winter Soldier, Manchurian Candidate reveal, or if it's just going to be, and it's, oh my
goodness.
It's going to
be like Ahsoka with the one helmeted dude whose name I totally forgot.
Yeah, was, you know.
Todd likes to call him the Farshin, because when he gets chapped, he dissipates like a fart.
Yeah. So it's like
Merrick.
We all grew up with, and you get flashbacks of them like having a food fight and this guy's like right behind them or something. It's just like, I've always been right next to the Bad Batch and now I'm bad.
The guy in the background. I was the nerd that everybody picked on, and now
except the Bad Batch, they always loved me. It's 99. And then the other one was like, are we going to see more of Wolf this season, or do you think it could be a spin-off, or is it going to be left to the imagination? What would you guys prefer?
We don't necessarily know anything about any future animated projects that would follow this line. But to me, I think that that makes the most sense, you know, because again, different people feel different things about, oh, I want the Clone Wars to be over. And that's what Todd would always say. I don't care for the Clone Wars. I don't want to see any more of it. But you know what? We're not in the Clone Wars anymore. Now we are in the age of the Empire. We are at the age of the Rebellion. And the connective tissue between this and what we see in Andor, and really the middling part that we see in Solo that doesn't really touch that, because Solo is a little bit more of the underworld part of things. It's not really going to touch the Rebellion, because the only part of anything Rebel related that we see in Solo is Enfys Nest, Aaron Kellyman's character, which is great, but it's very minor. And again, that is, Solo is 13 years, I think, after Revenge of the Sith. I'm trying to remember my numbers correctly. Where right now we're only two or three years after Revenge of the Sith. So we're very, very early Empire before anything that we see in Andor, except potentially some of those flashbacks. So lots and lots of room for Rex to have some impact. But again, why did we see him in Rebels so desperately dumped into the background, living in exile on some desert world where they're just riding around on an AT-RT and, you know, fishing in the desert? Why, you know, how do they end up there? Why are they there? You know, they fight the good fight and then just basically just, you know, figure out that there's nothing to be done. And that's why they ended up, because they just wanted to live. What happened before them? What took them to that end? I think there's still a story to be told. So that's where I'd like to see it go, for sure.
Peter, you agree you want to see that story, or is it good? Are you just like good filling in the blanks on your own? And you know, they got from like this little standoff to being buds that lived in a AT-AT in the desert.
I wouldn't mind seeing something more of this. Mostly because I want to see more. I just like seeing more of clones, period. And just the way that this season is wrapping up, the way that the season is panning out, I don't think they're going to come to a conclusion of the whole story of clones.
Yeah.
And so I think that still needs to be told. As I've said before, and I think we talked about when we were talking about Bad Batch or Ahsoka, I've said, like, I think that they're trying to do something setting up the Thrawn series with the Dark Force. And so I still think that that needs to happen yet, and they haven't done that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, could they not do it? Sure. But just with how they've been teeing things up with Tantis and all of that.
Yeah.
So in addition to wanting to see more clones, because I just love seeing these characters, Rex is one of my favorite characters that exists, period. There's things that still need to happen with these characters and need explanation. Cause for instance, in A New Hope, we don't see clones. We don't hear about clones other than like, they're not around anymore. So
right.
Did they all go? Did they all die? Were they all executed? Did they get sent to camps, or did they have a rebellion and run away?
Right.
Which is generally what I tend to think is where we're leading to is we're going to have some sort of attempt to remove the clones that's going to come from Tantis via some plague or something that they're going to engineer.
Yeah.
And then the clones are going to rise up. They're going to try to do something and then they're going to leave.
Yeah.
That's generally where I fall, partially because I'm, you know, always talking about the Dark Force, but also just because that makes sense, because they have to disappear somehow.
Yeah.
You can't have like this massive Grand Republic army just
go
melt into the Rebellion and go nowhere. Because if the Rebellion suddenly had an influx of the entire Grand Army of the Republic, that's a huge army.
Yeah.
Especially at this early point of the Empire where they're stormtroopers, but there's still not tons of them.
Right. Yeah, because they're all people and they have to be conscripted and trained and things of that nature. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to take decades, or at least a decade. So Well, cool.
No, they don't. They can't hit anything. So, you know, they only have to be trained for like a year.
Exactly. Yeah, it is a 5-minute no hit nothing training.
It's a caradune and Jaren training the shrimp farmers.
Yeah,
put the sticks this way and pull the trigger, please.
Exactly, including my buddy Eugene Cordero, who I met on the Star Trek cruise. Awesome guy and a Michigan guy, which I never realized that he is from Southeast Michigan. So, Eugene, cool. I'm sure you have no familiarity with our show, but I enjoyed spending time with you. And go Michigan, go Michigan State. Excuse me, I will not give homage to University of Michigan because I'm a U of M grad because I'm a MSU grad. But anyway, all right, moving on to episode 8. Bad territory. Nate Villanueva, our director, Matt, I'm going to say Minishwevitz because that sounds great to my tongue, is the writer from just back on March 20. We have the return of the fantastic Wanda Sykes as Fi. I just absolutely love her. Fi has been asked by the Batch to make inquiries as to the Emperor's M-Count projects. And Fi gives back that she reports that bounty hunters have been hired in the search for subjects that feature that special trait. Believing that Fennec Shand, our good buddy from back in Mando in the Book of Boba Fett and this very show, may know the answer, Hunter and Wrecker decide to seek her out, leaving Omega and Crosshair back home on Pabu. While Shand knows nothing herself, she refers them to another bounty hunter who might, in exchange for them helping her capture a current target, Slar Saris. So basically, we're employing the classic Mandalorian trope, hey, I can help you, but why don't you jump on in and do this thing that's totally got a great chance of getting you killed, and if you don't, then I got you. After an arduous hunt, they bring Saris down, but Shand secretly betrays the Batch. Shocking. On Pabu, Crosshair refuses to talk about the trauma he's endured on Tanis, which impairs his sniping skills. Omega helps him overcome his handicap, teaching him meditative techniques, which I thought was very, very, very nice.
Well, so, she works on it. We don't see if it solves it.
Right, exactly. But yes,
I did love the Wookiee name drop in her buddy Gungi.
Your buddy Gungi, I know that's very dear to your heart. Let me get this out of the way right away, and then I'll touch upon this later. I did see this in a drop on either Instagram or TikTok. The planet they spend the majority of their time on, Space Florida, with all the swamps and the landmines. But I thought with the disgusting water, my note was it's either Space Mexico or Space Flint, Michigan, if you're at all familiar with the water in 2017 in Flint right here in our very state.
It definitely reminded me of the Clone Wars episodes on Nalhutta. It's not that planet, but it definitely gave the same vibes.
Gross enough. But anyway, yeah, those are my initial thoughts. But Mark, please.
Yeah, no, I'll jump right in on this one. I was kind of torn by this episode because it felt a little bit, like you said, Mandalorian flavor of the week, mission of the, you know, get the information, mission of the week kind of thing. But also had some decent character development with Omega and Crosshair being alone on Pabu, the meditation, the, you know, seeing him struggling, seeing him keeping things in, her relentless optimism to get him to open up, and that kind of stuff. And then seeing Hunter and Wrecker do what they do best and kind of be let loose. And, you know, Fennec Shand, who we see in the Book of Boba Fett is like the best at what she does, for her to need help. We saw her in the Book of Boba Fett take down a full hive of, you know, drug lord and, you know,
like the Pike Syndicate, which is no small potatoes.
Unstoppable. But yeah, but in this, you got to think about it is that this is 20, almost 30 years prior. So, you know, potentially she's in her 20s, which means in you know, Book of Boba Fett, she's in her 50s or late 40s. So she is a young buck, as it were, a youngling, who's probably got more bravado than actual sense or experience. But she's got a good rap. I mean, she's very confident.
She's smart.
In keeping up her deal. But realizes that there are things that obviously the Batch that Wrecker and Hunter have to offer that she needs. But again, she dances around with, you know, things like, you know, when Hunter is really drilling or is when Wrecker is really drilling her down, oh man, money isn't everything. And she simply says, that's because you ain't got none. You know, so it's just like she's a rolling quip machine. She's not wrong. But yeah, even though she's such a badass, she can't do everything by herself. But let's face it, in the execution of bringing down their mark, which is a full-on anamorphotized praying mantis, that's fantastic. It was pulled from, because I did watch a video on this. I love keeping up with Eric Voss on Young Rock Stars. He's kind of my breakdown guy. And then also the Star Wars Explained. I'm very fond of that channel. Not that I want to give anybody too much airtime, but I do enjoy the insight. This was a set photo that you saw from the cantina back in episode 4. So this was, this was a constructed, basically prop, as it were. That's something that was featured off camera. So this is a valid, you know, species or a race that's present in the Star Wars universe. But yeah, this mantis is tough as shit. They can't stun him 4, 5, 6 times to finally make him go down. I do love that Fennec was smart enough to sabotage his barge before they went in to get him, because they knew that he was going to sneak by. He's that tough. Yeah. Cool takedown. I agree where you're coming from, Mark. It was very samey in so much that, you know, and again, kind of telling, because Fennec is a character that came from the Mando-verse, or basically the Filoni-verse, forward, you know, 30 years from where we're seeing here, that it was one of these, hey, help me do this thing, and then I'll maybe help you out, and blah, blah, blah. But still ended up in some very cool sequences, I thought, which in a lot of ways, particularly being somebody who's not the world's greatest fan of the sequel trilogy, because again, I grew up in the OT time, and the sequels, some parts of it don't really work for me, but a lot of it is segments that work really great. Like the Duel of the Fates works really great, or the droid factory sequence in episode 2 works really great. You know what I mean? There were sequences in this that really, that were really a lot of fun, and I dug it.
Peter.
I'm kind of in the same boat, which is ironic because there's boats in this.
Yeah, right. Lots of boats
and hovercraft.
Yeah, in space boats. Space Flint, Michigan, exactly. Don't drink the water.
It's like the Everglades.
Yeah.
Which it's more apt because they had giant crocodiles, which was hilarious.
Right, very nice. Yeah, exactly. Space Florida.
For me, I watched this with my brother, and we were at the end of it, we were kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
What happened? Like, obviously things happened. But we didn't feel like there was a huge progression from the beginning of the episode to the end of the episode. Because at the end of the episode, Hunter and Wreck are like, okay, do you have information for us? I don't have it yet. And we're just like, oh, no.
I'll give you a call. That was like such a dodge. And being in sales my whole career, I'm like, really? You're going to give me a call? I mean, that's
I'm not surprised, right there. But at the same time, we're just like, oh, dang it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I didn't close this deal. I'm not happy about that shit.
Yeah. I mean, you could see that Hunter and Wrecker were just peeved beyond all belief, which I would be too. So the satisfaction how that ended was just like, eh. I mean, I liked the teaser at the end where we get Fennec betraying them to potentially Ventress, would be my guess.
No doubt about it. 100% think that's what we're going to see this week.
Is simply it? Because they made such an effort of not even giving a silhouette or a shoulder. Because that character you can recognize from shoulder and neck because they're just so iconic. You can immediately tell who that is. So because they spent so much time making sure that we didn't know who that was, that's probably who it is. Because I can't see Fennec Shand calling Cad Bane. As much as people want to see him again, I don't think so.
Yeah, you know, I think we're definitely Cad Bane. I would say we're Cad Baned out, but Ventress is who I'd like to see. And Boba, we're good. It's like I feel good with those characters myself personally, but Ventress. And again, this series, because again, Ventress was featured so heavily in the promo sequences running up to the series, she's the one who they decided to kind of flip a script, because in a canonical novel with her and I believe it was Master Voss, that she was, she had a romance with him and then she died. And now she's
Grievous killed her.
Well, I'd like to see how they flip that around, because again, canon's
this is going to be a little bit more of a explanation than what they did with the Ahsoka book. Cause when at the beginning of the Ahsoka book, which is different from the ending of season 7 of the Clone Wars, it's not that different. So you can like, finagle it a little bit, but with this one, it's like, no, she did. So how are you going to work that out?
That's a rare, that Ahsoka book is a rare one that April read that I didn't. So she knows more about that than
it's
me.
Pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. I might have to have that.
There are a lot of like the names that come that show up in season 7 and in Rebels, that's where they kind of are.
Yeah.
So that's kind of fun.
Excellent.
But yeah, so I did like the interaction between Omega and Crosshair. That was really, really good.
Big time. Big time.
Some good character development there. I like how Crosshair is like slowly being opened back up into the Batch family. So that's that's really good, really healthy. It's incidentally, it's also part of why I think that the assassin might be Tech.
Yeah.
Just because they're making such an effort to reunite the, the Batch before the end that it would seem it just seems like that might be where they're going with that.
Yeah, I agree. And we have a total of 12 episodes. Is that what we landed on? So we are on 8.
I think so. Yeah.
Is it 12? Yeah. So we got a little bit more.
Maybe 15, wasn't it?
I don't remember the full number. Left.
Don't you know? You would think we'd be more prepared, but we're not. So feel free to add us on Threads or add us on Instagram or Facebook at Secret Friends Unite and let us know. Unless
Mark 15 episodes,
15. So we definitely have some room to wiggle. So they're definitely drawing that out and building a greater story. So yeah, awesome. Mark, we've talked, have you talked, are we good? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm really curious if it is, Ventress or if it is someone else. I don't know if it was established in Book of Boba Fett and I'm kind of rewatching that series right now. Is it ever established that Fennec and Boba knew each other prior to him saving her?
It seems like they didn't know each other.
Yeah, it didn't feel like,
at least from what I gleaned from the few scenes that they had when he like, when she woke up after he took her to the
Because he simply rescued her because he was on the spiritual journey after his time with the Tuskens, that he wanted to do right, which is why he ultimately saved her. And then the two of them decided to overthrow Jabba's empire and then say, hey, we're going to be criminals, but we're going to be good criminals. I mean, let's face it, though, a lot of what happened in the Book of Boba Fett doesn't make any goddamn sense, but that's okay. It does seem like that was their direction.
For me, I was wondering if this would, again, be something that makes something that already came better in retrospect. Like if you watch this first.
Sure, yeah.
It's like, they have like at least a little professional banter back and forth kind of thing of like, hey, I'll give you a job. I know you're up and coming. You're up and coming too. Cool. Let's get along. Here's a tip. Go get them for the Empire. You'll be in Darth Vader's good graces. This could also just like straight up be someone from the Empire, but I guess she says the Empire like.
Yeah, she references the Empire tangentially because originally when the hologram popped up, I thought, well, maybe she's contacting Hemlock directly or something.
I straight up thought Vader. Or Hemlock would make a good.
I don't think we'll see Vader in this. I mean, they pulled out the stops by bringing back Ian McDiarmid, which was amazing.
Yeah, big time.
But I'm not sure that we'll see Vader just because if I remember correctly, he's kind of in the shadows in the beginning of the Empire, like the really, really early bits, and then he becomes more of like the feared tool of the Emperor.
Right. Yeah, because really, even if you follow in, even hit the early, you know, like volume one of the Marvel Darth Vader comic, his function seems to be really being an enforcer of wiping out the extension of Order 66. Right. And that's really what he's working on, is finding those last Jedi and squeezing them out and different squads. And this, we meet Dr. Aphra and she's part of that project of finding out all that kind of stuff. So cool. most def. Cool. Yeah.
I think that pretty much wraps it up. Peter, thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
Good seeing you. Glad to have, and we've never seen his face, so you don't really know. We don't know if that is Peter. I'd like to believe
it. Could be my twin. You never know.
Hey, Peter does actually have a twin, so that's what makes it so funny. Peter, where do people find you out there? I know you're very selective about your social media, but lay it on us.
Selective as in just not active. You can find me on most platforms at Petrus Aquinas. I don't really do much of anything, but if you poke me, I might say something. I'm usually more active on like Discord or things like that. Discord, anything. And then you can find me on various on a Twitch channel where I play in a Star Trek game and then I help on a Star Trek audio series. So you can hear some of that.
I love it.
And my lovely voice. You can go over to Starship Excelsior.
You do, of course, find Peter biweekly on this very network on the Code 47 Star Trek podcast because he is my regular, one of my regular three co-hosts. So awesome. Very good. And you can find me over on Threads and on Instagram. C3 Carpenter, spell it out. But the main thrux of what I do, along with Peter and my lovely wife April, we do run the USS Grand Petoskey, which is one of the larger chapters of the International Star Trek Fan Club in the world. We are based here in West Michigan, but we have chapters all over. I'm very lucky to be the person who handles Region 13, which is Michigan and Eastern Canada. If you're a Trekker within the sound of my voice or even beyond, visit sfi.org to learn more about what we do. If you'd like to talk to me directly, ussgrantpetoskey.com. Drop us a note, and I'm happy to find your Trekkers wherever you are. Mark, what about you?
You can find me mainly on Instagram and TikTok at Canerdian_Jedi. And of course, hanging out in the Secret Friends Unite Discord group as well.
Yes, yeah, great. I dub it somewhat ironically and erroneously the funnest corner of Discord would be Secret Friends Unite, so please do visit us there. With that, friends, again, I will thank you for joining us. I'm going to tell you that sharing is caring, to keep on trucking.
May the Force be with you. Rex, play us out.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-